As I like to tell people, I used to be young and stupid. I'm not young anymore. So, if you join me in Hebrews 11 tonight, Hebrews chapter 11. I had a great opportunity a few years ago at our church in Silver Lake to, I actually came across a blog article where a pastor had looked at Hebrews chapter 11 and had just gone through the chapter giving basically a one or two sentence statement about what faith looks like from the examples that were recorded in that chapter. He called it the variegated nature of faith. Well, I thought that word was a little big, so I just decided that'd make a really good series. So we took several Sunday nights and called the series The Facets of Faith. That's a smaller word. I like that one better. But took an opportunity to look at a lot of those examples individually, but read what was in the New Testament, yes, but then go back and actually preach from that Old Testament context to look at what went on, and it was astounding and amazing and refreshing to see the grace of God as He describes for us in the New Testament this faith. And honestly, sometimes you look back in the Old Testament and you say, show me the faith portion of what this person was doing back here. It's really hard to see until you see God's commentary on it later on. Really exciting passage. But I want to consider with you tonight, not one particular example of an individual from this chapter, but some statements that are made that are true really in one way or another of all those mentioned in this chapter. And consider a thought with me. I'd like to ask a question to start. And well, first let me give you a little bit of an extended quote from somebody named Paul Tripp. He writes, "We all hope in something." And let me say again that for us, we know this perhaps, but for us the word hope has come to be used as kind of a, well, almost another word for wish. A wish that that might come true. So I hope it doesn't, we've got tickets for a Rockies game tomorrow night. I hope it doesn't rain on us. The way the weather's been, that's not a very certain hope. But what am I saying? Well, I don't know whether it's going to happen or not. I don't know what's going to happen. I wish that we can get through the entire game without being rained on. But that's not what the word hope means in Scripture. Here where we see the word hope, it's an expectation. It's something certain. It's something that is there. It is my hope. Paul Tripp writes, "We all hope in something. We all hope for something. So much of how we look at life and how we live our lives is connected to the things in which we place the fundamental hopes of our lives. Hope always has three elements: an assessment, an object, and an expectation. We look around our lives and we see something that isn't right, something that could be better. That's that assessment. And then we latch on to an object of hope. There's something or someone, maybe it's a thing, maybe it's a person, maybe it's a circumstance, that if this could only happen, if we could attain this, then we attach an expectation on that object that that will fix what's broken over here. Well, the reality is there are always only two options for us. We either look horizontally for that hope, we look around at what we can see and the people around us and the things around us, or we look to God Himself. So let me ask a question. Does God always keep His promises? I know we're in church, but don't nod your head just yet. I've got a phrase I use at home. I want to ask you here. Turn off your church brain for a minute and put your real person brain back in. Maybe that doesn't happen to you, but sometimes it does to me. We get in church, and what's the right answer? Well, Jesus. Ask your kids, what'd you learn about in Sunday school today? God. That's good. Real person brain for a minute. Does God always keep His promises? Does He always deliver? Now, with that question, those questions in mind, let's read part of Hebrews chapter 11 tonight. And we're going to realize, I hope, that the answer to these questions goes a little bit deeper than just a simple yes or no. Join me in Hebrews 11, chapter 11, verse 1. As we begin reading some familiar verses, we won't read the whole chapter. We'll focus on a few here in just a moment. Verse 1, "Now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good report. Through faith, we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made by things which do appear. By faith, Abel offered unto God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, by which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts, and by it, he, being dead, still speaks. By faith, Enoch was translated that he should not see death, and was not found because God had translated him. For before his translation, he had this testimony, that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, that God is a rewarder of them that diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being warned of God of things not seen as yet, moved with fear, prepared an ark to the saving of his house, by the which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is by faith. By faith, Abraham, when he was called to go out into a place which he should after receive for an inheritance, obeyed. And he went out not knowing whether he went. By faith, he sojourned in the land of promise as in a strange country, dwelling in tabernacles, tents with Isaac and Jacob, the heirs with him of the same promise. For he looked for a city which has foundations, whose builder and maker is God. Through faith also Sarah herself received strength to conceive seed, and was delivered of a child when she was past age, because she judged him faithful who had promised. Quick side note, you know the story from Genesis. What a merciful rendering and account and testimony God gives of Sarah there. Therefore sprang there even out of one, Abraham, and that one as good as dead, so many as the stars of the sky in multitude, and as the sand which is by the seashore innumerable. These all died in faith, not having received the promises. All these people were still living by faith when they died. These people died, God's word says, not having received the promises. Does God always keep his promises? Does he always deliver? Drop down to verse 39, and you'll see there something else. More witnesses to faith, and we see all these all, having obtained a good report through faith, received not the promise. They believed. They waited. They went to their dying day and still did not see what had been promised. Does God always deliver? Well, yes, he does. But not necessarily on my timetable. Not necessarily when I think he should. Not necessarily in this life. But he does. Consider tonight the perspective of faith. Can I give you kind of a couple of ideas, a negative and a positive, as we consider just these verses here? Let's keep reading in verse 13. I stopped right there. These all died in faith, not having received the promises. Of course, the text doesn't stop there. So let's read the rest. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them and embraced them. Embraced those promises. And confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. For they that say such things declare plainly that they are seeking, they seek a country. Truly, If they'd been mindful of the country from which they came out, they might have had opportunity to have returned. But now they desire a better country, that is, an heavenly. Wherefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared for them a city. Consider tonight faith's perspective, true faith. What's being talked about here, true faith will not anchor in this life. True faith will not anchor in this life. Consider, it demands no result in this life. Now that runs in stark contrast to the name it and claim it, or as I heard one preacher so beautifully describe it, the blab it and grab it description of what faith means. If there's something you want, you just declare in faith that you have it and God has to give it to you. Well, that's not how it works. God's not a genie in a bottle. There's no magic spell that makes God do what you want, and isn't that a good thing? We can't manipulate God. But true faith demands no result in this life. The operative word there is demands, okay? Because God obviously lets us see often, many times, the results of faith in him. He lets us see him at work. He shows us his power. He shows us his glory. He shows us the work that he's doing in our hearts to change us day by day to look more like Christ. Some tangible results or evidences that what God says are true are always nice. But real faith understands that this world and this existence are never the end of the story. I forget who I heard this from recently, but just the description of the idea that as we read the Bible, it's important to understand, yes, God works in my life individually. Pastor Larry talked about setting up my wife and me. We love to tell people, how did you meet? We said we met on a week-long, 800-mile blind date. And that's exactly what it was. Some of you were there in that old building. Your smile, I still remember your smile from that choir loft, looking down there at Jill and this guy that had shown up from somewhere out in Missouri. I look at all the things that had to happen to bring us together. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary this week. There is no better match for me than the one that God brought to me. And let me tell you, I'm not going to be teaching any classes on here's how to find your perfect spouse. But you look back and see all the things that God did. He was at work. And he did good things. And that was wonderful. You couldn't necessarily see that ahead of time. And it's great to see that God is present and active and at work. And we do see glimpses of that and sometimes powerful examples of that. But these people received specific promises from God. And they lived by faith. They lived believing those promises. They died still expecting and still waiting. Scripture states clearly they did not receive what they were promised, but they were able to embrace those promises from a distance. We're told here that they welcomed those promises. They embraced those promises. This is to be happy about something because it's going to be something welcome. To anticipate with pleasure. This is something I have a hard time doing. I don't like to wait for anything. Ever. But they were able to see what God... I am so bad. Let me tell you how bad I am. I would rather, in my own mind and thing, I would rather have somebody say, okay, this great thing that you'd love to have happen is going to happen 1 year from today. I would rather hear that and know that than to have somebody say, this great thing that you want to happen, it's going to happen soon. And leave it there. Don't give me soon. I want a date. I want a delivery date. I'd like the time of day. Are my shoes appropriate for when it arrives? I want to know. Even if they tell me it's a year from now, okay, I'd rather hear 1 year from now than to have it be a week later, but they just say soon. Oh. But real faith, the kind demonstrated by these here, believed so strongly what God said. They embraced that truth as if it was already there. They could see it. It was afar off, but they could see it. And they embraced it. They welcomed that truth. It was real. It's out there, but it's there. True faith will not anchor in this life. It demands no result in this life, because this life is not the end of the story. It demands no result in this life. It demands no recognition in this life. Look what we read. These all died in faith, not having received the promises, but having seen them afar off, and were persuaded of them and embraced them. And what did they do? They confessed that they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. They admitted, they acknowledged publicly. They emphatically declared that we are strangers, aliens. We are unknown, unheard of, unfamiliar. This is not where we're from. Very, very old John Wayne movie. He rode into a town, Old West. I mean, old movie, rode into a town and walked up to a group of men, and somebody looked at him, the stranger from outside, and said, "Well, who might you be when you're at home?" I love that. Very subtle way of saying, you're nobody here. Who might you be when you're at home? True faith is able to say, who are you here? Nobody. True faith is able to look and admit and acknowledge, this is not where I'm from. This is not where I deserve to be recognized. This is not where I expect to receive the accolades. I'm not from here. Grew up in a small town, mostly in southwest Missouri, and we had a basketball coach at that time, and I forget what the situation was, what the details were, but he and I were walking down the hall on the way somewhere and talking about something, and I expressed an opinion as a young man in that area that it just caused him to stop in mid-stride. He just stopped, and he turned and looked at me, and he said, "You're not from here, are you?" In reality, no, I wasn't. But something about that perspective or whatever I'd said, that just doesn't sound like the native interpretation of things around here. Well, there's something about true faith that enables those who believe God's promises and believe what God is doing to stick out in such a way that they just, you're not from here, are you? These weren't. Faith makes it okay to be a nobody, and reminds us that that's what we are in this world. Charles Spurgeon made the statement, when Christ was here, the world reckoned him to be a nobody. And while his people are here, they must expect to be judged in the same way. Well, who are you? Nobody. Nobody here. This is not where I'm from. Faith demands no result in this life. It demands no recognition in this life. It makes it okay to be a nobody and reminds us that's what we are in this world. Faith makes it okay to have no place and reminds us that that's what we have in this world. Look what it says. They confessed that they were aliens. They were strangers and pilgrims. They sojourned. Someone who lives in a place without holding citizenship. Someone who dwells more or less permanently in a place which is not their own country. One who makes a temporary home. My dad has been in pastoral ministry since before I was born. I was born in Greenville, Mississippi, but don't have any remembrance of that. We moved away. I was about a year and a half old. Went to Springfield, Missouri. Were there for several years, up to about 79, and then went to Mississippi for a while, where he tried to start a church there for a little bit. That didn't go. We were in Tulsa for a little bit, then back to Buffalo, Missouri, where he stayed for 18 years. And so I was about fifth grade or so when we got to Buffalo, and was there through graduating high school. Went to Springfield for college, so 45 minutes away, and was teaching a Sunday school class at my home church there through college. So really, Buffalo, Missouri became the closest thing that I had to a hometown. It's where I'd been the longest. It's where I had the roots. That's where my parents lived. I was getting ready to graduate from seminary back in early 2001. Starting to think about what's going to happen, and thought we had it all figured out. My dad and I had talked, and he was still pastoring there in Missouri. He was a couple years away from 20 years, and he said what he'd like to do is bring me on staff as associate, finish out a couple more years, maybe get 20 years, and then step aside and allow me first opportunity to candidate as pastor of my home church. And I thought that's what it was going to be. Seemed pretty well lined up. That's what was going to happen. I was going to graduate in May. Probably head that direction. So December 2000, just as we're kind of looking that direction, he goes back home, and there are other things going on, but the call that I got from him, where I expected to hear a yes or no on whether the church wanted me to come as associate, I heard that he had resigned as pastor. I'm graduating in 5 months. I was sure for about 4 years, this is where I'm going when I'm done. Now it's not. Within the next 2 months, my parents moved to Tulsa. It's where they are now. God provided a place for them there. But in one fell swoop for me, in a very literal sense, my past, my present, my future was completely gone. No moorings, no idea. Numb for a couple of weeks. Just where do you go from here? Well, God wasn't surprised, of course, and he continued to move. But that sense and that understanding that now I don't have a hometown. We've got many transplants here. A lot of you aren't from this area, but you're from somewhere. So people ask me, somebody asked me now, well, where are you from? And I say, more or less, Southwest Missouri. But I wasn't born there. I don't have a town there. I don't have roots there. I don't have a place. And for me, that's become a very powerful picture, an illustration of this truth, that for these who believed God's promise, this was not their home, even the place where they lived. They didn't build cities. They lived in tents. They roamed over the area. They didn't plant. They didn't anchor, because this was not it. Well, that sounds kind of scary. Yeah, but real faith makes that okay. Because it's not that I have no place, it's I have no place here. There is a place. True faith, faith's perspective, true faith will not anchor in this life. Let's get to a positive idea here. True faith will not anchor in this life, because true faith longs for heaven. True faith longs for heaven. Look at verses 14 to 16. They that say such things, they that say what? Those that say, I'm a nobody here and that's fine. Those that say, I have no permanent place and anchor here, and that's okay, because there is one somewhere. Those that say that, what are they saying? They are declaring plainly they're seeking another country. Oh, I see. They're seeking another country. This isn't where they're from. They want to go back to where they're from. That's what they're saying. No. Truly, if they had been mindful of that country, if that's what they were thinking about, if they were thinking about or talking about the country from where they came out, well, they could have gone back. There might have been an opportunity to go back. But that's not what they're talking about. No, they're saying plainly, verse 14, that they seek, they long for, they yearn for, they're seeking after, they're wishing for a country of their own. A homeland. A home country. They miss this place. But it's a place they've never been. Some of you remember the old gospel song, Beulah Land. Kind of homesick for a country to which I've never been. True faith longs for God's presence and longs for heaven because that's where home really is. It's not here. There are great places here, great people here, good things here. But this is not home. True faith longs for heaven. This fondness is future-oriented, not earthbound. They keep recalling and thinking about this again and again. This desire is focused forward, future-oriented, not earthbound. And the fullness of this desire, it's God-given. It's God-designed. Look what it says in verse 16. Now they desire a better country. That is, an heavenly. The last part of that verse, for God has prepared for them a city. A city. Far different from the tents in which they dwell. Not a temporary dwelling, but a city. Planted, established, firm. Not something they can build for themselves, although you go back and look at the Old Testament, the early patriarchs, and they did try, didn't they, in their humanity at some times to fulfill God's promises on their own. That never worked out very well. But ultimately they realized it was God Himself that was going to bring this to pass. What they're looking for is what God has built, not what they can build for themselves. I could borrow from Paul Tripp again. He writes, Paul says it all in Romans chapter 5 and verse 5 when he tells us that hope in God will never put us to shame. It will never embarrass us by failing to deliver. In those words, Paul tells us where hope can be found. It's found only vertically. Only when God is your hope sure and secure. Only He is able to give you the life that your heart seeks. Only He is able to give your soul the rest that it needs. Only He can deliver the internal peace that is the hunger of every human being. It's only when grace has hooked you to Him that you are connected to what life is really all about. In his brief words, Paul confronts us with this thought. If your hope disappoints you, it's because it's the wrong hope. If I could only be in relationship with that person, everything would be great. Well, maybe it would be better than it is now, but guess what? You're a sinner, and you're going to be married to a sinner. That has its problems, doesn't it? That's not perfect, isn't it? That doesn't meet all the needs, does it? Well, if only we could reach this position of financial security, then, yeah, how secure is secure? And even if you can, does that satisfy, does that fill all the gaps? Does that really answer all the... It doesn't, does it? Well, if only I could be sure that this family situation was the way it... Yeah, we could go on and on and on, but every time we look for something to anchor on in this life, what we can see, what we can know here, what we can produce for ourselves, what we can get from someone else, it always fails to ultimately deliver, doesn't it? Why? Because it's not able to do what you're trusting it to do. People talk about, well, we believe in the power of prayer. I believe in the power of God. Because your faith is only as valid as the object of your faith. Your faith is only valid, it doesn't matter how sincere it is, if you're trusting something that can't deliver what you're trusting, it's not a valid faith. If you're looking for a hope here, you won't find it. Not fully, not completely, not ultimately, because it can't be provided here. All these things were meant to point us to the one who gave them. And that's God Himself. I skipped over a little phrase on purpose. This jumps out at me, and I love this little statement here. These who live this kind of faith, the kind of faith that says, I don't have to be anybody here, I don't have to have any place here, because my value is in the one who's called me. My value is in my God, and my place is what He has built and is building and is providing for me. And I'm embracing that now. And I rejoice in that now. It's still afar off, but there's where my hope is. There's where it is. And my heart longs for that. I miss that. Things are great here, sure, but I want to be here. I want to be with Him. Those people, they desire a better country and heavenly. Wherefore, because of this, God is not ashamed for them to call Him their God. Is that what it said? Wherefore, He is not ashamed to be called their God. I have four kids. We have the running joke when one of the kids does something exciting. I'll make a statement to the effect of, yeah, that's my wife's youngest son. I'll introduce my kids. This is my daughter Bethany. This is my daughter Alyssa. This is my son Chad. This is my son Caleb. That's what you'd expect, right? So I'm their dad. They're my kids. A neat thing happens as parents, though, sometimes. You find yourself in a position where you introduce yourself and you say, hi, I'm Bethany's dad. Well, guess what? I was here before there was a Bethany. And I was Cliff before I was Bethany's dad. But hi, I'm Bethany's dad. And that's a good thing. We're told here that God looks at these people. God looks at those who would say, God, here is fine. But I'm longing for You. And I believe what You've told me is true. I believe that You are going to do what You said You would do. For Abraham, he believed God, and it was counted to him for righteousness. He believed somehow God was going to produce offspring numbering like the sands on the sea and the stars in the heaven. He believed that. I believe that this same Jesus who has gone into heaven will come again in like manner as they saw Him go into heaven. I believe that. I believe that He which began that good work in me will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. I believe that. And I desire to believe that Paul said this present suffering is not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to come. And I pray with that father in Mark, Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. But we're told here that God looks at those who have that kind of faith, and He says, hey, 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 you see that faith? You see that right there? You see that faith that's fine with being a nobody down there? Fine with having no place down there because He's resting on what I've told Him I have for him? You see that faith? I'm His God. I'm His God. true faith enables me to be a nobody with nothing on this earth. Because my heart's focus is God's recognition in His heavenly realm. I'll never be happy if I'm just happy here. And neither will you. Neither will you. If your hope disappoints you, it's because it's the wrong hope. What carries your hope right now? What carries your hope? Is it Him? He's not ashamed to be called the God of that kind of faith. Shall we pray?